This is the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. This week on the Compass, we take a look at the damage wrought by a wild, warm, and very wet winter storm on beautiful Brennan, and a one-time Green Party presidential candidate comes to Port Townsend to help fan the flames of a revolution against what he calls corporate rule. So now, let's go inside the Compass. Cleanup continues this week from a massive warm winter rainstorm that brought up to 9 inches of precipitation to the Olympic Mountains starting Wednesday night and continuing through the weekend into Monday. Although the storm also severely damaged the old train trestle now used as a pedestrian crossing of the Dungeness River for the Olympic Discovery Trail, the worst damage from the storm came to homes and other structures in the deltas of the Duckabush and Dos Wallops Rivers in the picturesque village of Brennan on the Hood Canal, in a replay of flooding caused by the last big storm in December, a storm which at that time caused a reported $200,000 in damage to Brennan's Duckabush Fire Station, along with extensive damage to roads and utility lines. Taking advantage of a lull in the storm on Saturday afternoon, I drove down to Brennan to survey the damage. I had checked the weather forecast online before I set off and had noticed that there was a special advisory warning of the possibility of landslides due to saturated soils. And, sure enough, when I turned off of Highway 101 onto Duckabush Road in the flood zone, I soon came to a blockade with a pair of fire trucks and a flagger. One lane of the road was completely blocked by a tangled mass of soil, small trees, and broken bushes that had very recently tumbled downslope from beneath a fresh clear-cut. A nearby side road still stood under several inches of water, although the water seemed to have subsided from the few buildings I saw close by. I parked my car and walked over to talk with the fireman standing guard next to the slide. He introduced himself as Brennan Fire Department Lieutenant Curtis Leitner.
So, tell me what's happening here today.
Well, we received a tone out for a mudslide off of Kelly Road. So we responded in that direction just before we were going to take the left turn onto Shorewood. We saw that the landslide was actually up on the Duckabush. But we showed up. I mean, you can see here. Trees, brush, lots of dirt.
Completely blocking one lane of the road here, but fortunately leaving the other one. So about how many more houses are up along the Duckabush?
You know, the Duckabush County Roads, it's 4 miles, but then there's also houses a mile up in the Forest Service Roads. So you got multiple homes. Couldn't tell you if I had to guess. I'd say, you know, at least a good couple hundred or so.
So were you around back in December when that other storm took out the fire station over here?
I wasn't, actually. I just got off shift that morning.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just got off shift that morning.
Well, I understand that did a fair amount of damage to the fire station.
It did a fair amount, yeah. We had to have a ServPro come out, and they had to take a look at the station, make sure we didn't have, you know, any mold getting formed or anything. Two rigs had to be sent to our mechanics. One of them got actually hydro-locked, so, that luckily insurance covered.
Hydro-locked, what's that mean?
That's just water got into the motor. Oh, yeah, yeah. Motors don't like that too much.
So I understand people were evacuated here yesterday.
Yeah, we had one family evacuated, a family of five, so not non-injured. They just wanted to get out, get to a safe place.
Did you have to evacuate them by boat? I mean, how did you
do that? Yeah, we had a Swiftwater rescue team from Clallam County help and assist us, and we had some rafts that we used to tow them out. So we had to use two boats to get them all out. They were all pretty happy to be getting out, so.
Any idea about how many houses were damaged in the storm yesterday?
I don't know about any damages. The house that we did the rescue for, they just said that they just fixed up from the last flood. And
from the one in December.
The one in December, yeah. So, I don't know which flood was worse. It sounded like the other flood was just because the fire station over there was, you know, pretty heavy in water. And yesterday,
this time not.
This time it didn't look like it much. No, I mean it did get to the station, but not as high as I was told from the December flood.
So I still see pools of water sitting around here on the grassy areas and so on. But I gather the water was probably considerably higher yesterday.
Yeah, I would say. I mean, depending where you were at in the area, I mean, you had a good, you know, hip height of water, so anywhere from 2 to 4 feet depending where you're at out there. So you know, the swift water rescue teams, they were all wearing their dry suits, so
oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a little cold out too, so as you can see, my coat's still wet from yesterday, so it's getting a little chilly today. It is said that we're supposed to be getting heavy rains for the next 2 days, so halfway through it.
As I drove back towards the center of Brennan, I noticed a sign at the entrance to the Dosawalip State Park. Flooded roadway, park closed. Ignoring it, I drove in and went to the shuttered ranger station where, knocking, I found Ranger Douglas Hinton and Senior Park Aide Tracy Mose working at their desks. Hinton invited me in and offered me a seat. Thank you. So anyway, first of all, is this the park normally open at this time of year?
Oh, yes. Yeah, we're year-round. We have typically one or two floods during the winter time, not to this extent. This was something different.
Yeah. So how high did the water rise yesterday?
In terms of the river itself, when it's bank full, generally that's 4 to 5,000 cubic feet per second. This time, I imagine, this is my guess, it's twice that. I bet it was close to a 10,000 CFS flood, based on how spread out the water was. And elevation-wise, of course, it, you know, it hits the low end where we are in the drainage and, of course, spreads out because we're a crescent-shaped delta, right? So elevation wasn't the issue. It was velocity and volume.
Hmm? Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, in practical terms, what does that mean? I mean, I see that out there right now, still on Saturday afternoon, there's quite a bit of, like, flooding in the lawn areas. Mm-hmm. And
I would say probably 80% of our campground at one point or another was underwater. Some of our points in the campground had 4 foot of water, you know, wow. The lower spots. Your average was probably 18 inches at the height, which I think was about 12:30 on, well, yesterday was for us. Yeah.
12:30 on Friday.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So how rapidly did it come up?
very quickly. I understand from Brennan District Station 41, they were out about 3 a.m. on Friday morning because the Duckabush started to flood at that time. And from that point till about 9, we gained the majority of the floodwaters. So what's that? Roughly 6 hours. Yeah.
Did you have people camping here that
day?
We had
one person. Mm-hmm. And we actually had her in a campsite, and we pulled her out of the site with that rig because the water was up to the trailer, and she would have been stuck. So that's a tractor with a trailer ball mounted on the bucket, and we got her relocated just today.
So she's still in the campground?
No, she's gone. No. She's moved her to another camp.
Well, so you've closed the camp. I mean, there was a sign I had to drive past.
Yes. So noted, sir. But all the drain fields were saturated, right? So all the surface water potentially is contaminated with sewage. Right? So obviously you can't have the public recreating in that environment because you're concerned for their safety. So we're closed until the waters recede and we can be assured that things are safe.
Is the water in the state park here well water?
It is. We have a well behind us here to the west, and it's about 70 to 80 feet deep and typically doesn't interact with surface water, because there's such a flow of subsurface water from the Dosawalip River that it's generally pretty isolated from flood water type pollution. But the standing water, that's what sits over the septic tanks, and that's where the problem comes from.
I see. So you're just worried about people actually like wading through sewage
or exactly.
Whatever.
Yeah. And it's not that it would necessarily be obvious sewage that you can see. It's the microbes that may be in the water from the septic systems.
Was there damage to facilities here?
We had a fair amount of what I call sedimentation. So some of our road surfaces have 3 feet of sand on them now, especially on the riverside of things. A little bit of erosional damage on some of our road shoulders, and then a lot of log debris, you know, to pick up, and a lot of gravel displaced from our campsites and road shoulders.
So when do you think you might be reopened?
We're shooting for next Wednesday, which is the 12th. Thursday, I think, is the 12th. Yeah, Thursday.
Right, President's Day weekend
coming up next weekend. Here. So up until Thursday, the 12th, we've had to cancel several reservations, and we don't anticipate impacting the reservations for the President's Day weekend. However, you'll definitely see issues from the flooding.
There will be remnants.
Yeah, there'll be saturated ground and probably some areas that are closed off, but we should be open. That includes the cabins and the platform tents, as well as the Rustic Ranger bunkhouse, which is the facility that you passed on your way in that has 2 foot of water in the driveway. So,
Are you expecting that water to be cleared and the bunkhouse ready to go by the next weekend?
So. Yeah, it should receive.
Was the bunkhouse itself, Tim?
Nope. The bunkhouse is high and dry, just the access to it was flooded. Impacted some reservations today, tomorrow, and yesterday, but we're done with that part of our recovery, I think.
This is Steve Evans reporting for KPTZ Community Radio News.
It's true. I did run for Attorney General. I ran for President. But I also want to be clear. As a lawyer, I've sued corporate polluters. I've lobbied elected officials who already got elected. I ran for political office myself. But the thing I'm most proud of as an engaged citizen, I've been arrested for nonviolent civil disobedience. I always know I'm in the right crowd when that gets the applause line. Right? I ran for president. Oh, you got arrested? All right, good job.
2004 Green Party presidential candidate and self-identified American revolutionary David Cobb came to Port Townsend last weekend to help fan the flames of a rapidly growing movement he helped to create, known as the Move to Amend. Back in 2009, Cobb, who is a lawyer, was among a dozen people gathered in a living room one evening talking about a court case called Citizens United that was coming before the U.S. Supreme Court. A case that was soon to reshape the rules of money and politics in the United States by defining corporations as people and money as speech, giving corporations the right to spend as much as they wanted on the candidates of their choice. Cobb attracted an audience that packed the Port Townsend Community Center to overflow and spoke to them with the cadence of a Texan Baptist minister.
In fact, if we were going to stay in the Attic Greek language, we'd have to confess something. We don't have a democracy, we have a plutocracy. It's the rule by a wealthy elite. In fact, things are so bad, I think we might need to make up a whole new word. It's a kleptocracy. The rule by a thieving wealthy elite. Right? Because they are stealing from us. They are stealing our labor, to be sure. And they are stealing the natural world. What people before us understood to be the commons.
Yes.
What we all have and participate in common treasury for all, they are stealing that from us. And frankly, they are stealing our future. And what's more devastating, we got to come to terms with, they are literally stealing our children and our grandchildren's future.
I had the opportunity to speak with Cobb briefly before his presentation began.
Why don't we start with how you got involved with the Move to Amend?
Well, listen, I do this work because I'm a true believer. As a little boy, I was taught that the United States of America stood for liberty, justice, and equality, and I believed it. And I was so proud to be an American. And as I grew up, I realized that I'd been lied to, that this country is actually a racist, sexist, class-oppressive society, and the huge corporations, American corporations, were destroying the planet. I got involved in efforts to make the country a better place from the anti-apartheid work I did as a student activist at the University of Houston in the 80s. I worked on Jesse Jackson's campaign for president in 1984, 1988, Jerry Brown's campaign in 1992. And I realized that the Democratic Party's presidential primary process is where progressive politics goes to die. Basically, you don't build any institutional capacity. You don't build any infrastructure that lasts. And the corporatists and the militarists who run that party then tell progressives, okay, you had your fun in the primary, now sit down, shut up, and there's nothing left to do. So The 90s, I got involved in not only Green Party organizing work, but also the grassroots global justice work. I was very active in the campaigns against the World Trade Organization and, you know, was part of the shutdown of the city of Seattle in November of 1999 around the WTO ministerial meeting there, was involved in the protests around the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank, worked with a group called the Program on Corporations, Law, and Democracy. I had a long history of fighting corporate power, and that was all through the 90s. So in 2010, actually in 2009, when I saw the Citizens United case in the lower courts, I realized that this was going to be bad. I knew that the Roberts Court, who had already gutted the Brown versus Board of Education decision, this is the most activist court that we have ever experienced in our lifetimes. Make no mistake about it. There has never been a more activist court willing to overturn laws around an ideology than the current court. So in 2009, I called a meeting of people who I had worked with to be fighting corporate power, over the decade.
Could we just hold on for a second here? Because I know what Citizens United is, and I think that a lot of our listeners probably do, but there's probably some people out there who don't quite know. So what was the Citizens United case?
Citizens United was a lawsuit brought by a nonprofit corporation who claimed that the movie that they had made, Hillary the Movie, which was clearly an election campaign piece attacking Hillary Clinton. This was a group that was attacking her from the right. And the Bush-appointed FEC commissioner said, this is clearly electioneering. You are violating the McCain-Feingold law. You know, John McCain, Republican, right. Russ Feingold, Democrat, a bipartisan agreement on trying to get money out of elections. So when I saw that case being argued, I knew that it was going to be bad. So I called a lot of people together before the opinion came down, and I said, we need to be ready. So I want to be clear. In 2009, Move to Amend was ready. The decision came down in 2010, and it was as bad as we thought it would be. Basically, completely overturned the McCain-Feingold law, opened up the floodgates to corporate money, not just in elections, but on the basis that corporations have constitutional rights.
Corporate personhood.
Corporate personhood. And corporate personhood is the shorthand for the illegitimate, totally court-created idea that a corporation has constitutional rights.
Which is actually an idea that evolved over a long period of time. This wasn't the only case.
Correct. Yeah. Indeed. And, of course, it's only gotten worse even since Citizens United. You've had McCutcheon. You've had Hobby Lobby. I mean, there's a whole history here. We were 12 people in a living room in 2010 when this... Today,
that was the birth of Move to Amend.
Move to Amend. 12 people in a living room. Today, we're 382,000 people and growing every day. We have over 150 local affiliates, like the one here in Port Townsend, that is doing work for Move to Amend as Move to Amend organizers. We have helped 16 states pass resolutions of support. We've helped 600 city council and county commissioners pass resolutions of support. And the thing I'm most proud of, we've been on the ballot 300 times. In other words, not just city council members voting, but actual
voters,
right? Ordinary people. We've been on the ballot 300 times. Can you guess how many times we've won? 300. We haven't lost yet. And it includes San Francisco, California, and Boston, Massachusetts, and Madison, Wisconsin. You know, the liberal places. You know where else we've won? Salt Lake City, Utah. We've won in Waukesha, Wisconsin, which is Republican Tea Party Governor Scott Walker's hometown, where they haven't voted for a Democrat for president or Congress in over 40 years.
In other words, you've got broad bipartisan support.
It is very broad, and it is very deep. We were on the ballot in the state of Montana in a statewide initiative, not unlike what WAMEND is doing, gearing up to do at the state level here in Washington. But Montana is not what we would call a liberal bastion, right? We were on the ballot in a statewide initiative there, and we won over 75% of the vote. The point is that we are uniting principled liberals, principled conservatives, moderates, radicals, Democrats, Republicans, Greens, Libertarians, Independents alike. This is something that is bringing a broad cross-section of people together who say, we may not agree on policy proposals, But the principle of a democratic republican self-government, we agree on. And the illegitimate court-created idea of corporate constitutional rights and money as speech is stealing our sacred right to self-government. I've never been part of anything that has grown so fast and is so systemic. This is actually going to change the ability for ordinary people to participate in our society and our government. And it's a very exciting thing to be part
now,
of.
What have these resolutions that have been passed in all these jurisdictions said? What's the substance of it?
In a nutshell, each and every one of them say only human beings have inherent inalienable constitutional rights, and artificial entities like for-profit corporations, non-profit corporations, and unions do not have inherent
living trust
constitutional rights. Living trust, you go down the list. Human beings have constitutional rights, period, full stop. And money is not the equivalent of political speech. In other words, money is property. And with that property, you can, in fact, buy microphones and amplifiers and drown out the voice of everybody else. So we say that campaign finance questions are political questions, right? And they should be determined through a political discourse and debate, and local communities should have the authority to decide how to best protect the integrity of their elections. State governments should have the same right and ability. And at the end of the day, it is a political question. And here's the thing. When the court turns a political question into a constitutional law question, you've just transformed we the people from active participants into mere spectators of a constitutional law question, where the courts tell us what we can or cannot do. And that's one of the reasons that Move to Mend is able to build such successful alliances with principled conservatives, because judicial activism is wrong. The court should not be able to overturn laws that are political decisions. Political decisions are the domain of the political process. The only time any law should be overturned is if the law violates the inherent and inalienable constitutional rights of a human being, like Jim Crow segregation laws, or laws forbidding women from voting, laws forbidding people from being able to organize a trade union. That violates individual human beings' constitutional rights.
Let's get back to the Green Party for a moment.
Sure.
I mean, you were a Green Party candidate. Are you still a Green Party member? And are you planning to be a political candidate again?
Good for you as a reporter to ask the question. I'm honored and happy to say I am a Green Party member, and I have a long history as a Green, and I'm proud of that. But I also have a long history of working in coalition with Democrats and Republicans and Libertarians, and will continue to do that. At this point, I can tell you with absolute clarity and certainty, I am not seeking the Green Party's nomination for president. I am focused like a laser beam on the Move to Amend campaign, uniting Greens and Democrats and Republicans and Libertarians on this movement.
Do you have a title in the campaign?
Yes, I'm the national spokesperson. So, but I'm also, since you've asked, I'm very proud to tell you I'm one of 10 members of the national leadership team of Move to Mend. 10 of us.
Sounds like one of the founders.
One of the founders. And of 10 people on the national leadership team, you were talking to the only white man on the national leadership team. We are multiracial. We are multiethnic. We have more women than men. We have young people on our national leadership team.
How young?
Two in their 20s, two in their 30s, and one in their 40s. So, you know.
Who's the eldest?
Jerome Scott is 74. So we have elders.
How old are you?
I am 51. We've got black and white, brown, and we are also spread out across the country, the 10 of us. You have actually one of the members of the Move to Mend National Leadership Team is Edgar Franks from Bellingham, Washington in Whatcom County, where he is an organizer with Community to Community, a group that does work for migrant farm workers. And he is the son of migrant farm workers himself. We also have Maria Augusto, who is a Puerto Ricana activist out of Miami, Florida. Laura Bonham from Utah. In other words, we're literally spread out across the country. The point is, we're not based in Washington, D.C. We're in local communities where we are community organizers ourselves. Because too often, the nonprofit industrial complex in Washington, D.C., gets so wrapped up in just lobbying Congress in one election cycle that they're not doing the work of building grassroots movements. We are of the grassroots movement, and that's one of the reasons the success of 600 city council and county resolutions, 300 election campaigns. We're doing the work day by day, brick by brick, of building a mass movement in this country.
So what's the grand strategy? I mean, so you're getting these resolutions passed in all these local jurisdictions, and then so once the resolutions have been sitting there for a while, how do you get from there to an actual amendment to the Constitution?
Well, let's be clear. It is not that the resolutions sit there, right? I mean, because it is a tactic of educating and organizing for political power. Because Move to Amend is not only doing resolutions and we're not only doing initiatives, we are also rolling out the Pledge to Amend campaign, where we're going to candidates for office, whether you're an elected official already and serving as an incumbent or a challenger. It doesn't matter what party you're in. If you're running for office, we're going to ask you, do you support the Move to Amend effort, yes or no? And we're going to let voters know the answer. This is what they said. If you're running for office, you are going to have to answer that question because we're building a mass movement. Remember, 12 people to 382,000 people in a few short years. We're growing by leaps and bounds. This movement has legs. It is uniting people. And at the end of the day, we believe what Samuel Gompers, the great trade activist, said. No permanent enemies, no permanent allies. We will reward our friends. We will punish our enemies. We are not taking direction from the leadership of either the Democratic or the Republican parties about what is allowed or not allowed. I'm willing to work with Democrats, Republicans. I don't care. But what I'm not willing to do is to be told what is acceptable to the leadership of either the Democratic or the Republican Party. And that's the distinction.
Let's talk funding a little bit. Do you have a lot of corporate sponsors?
Well, I appreciate the question. The answer is no, nor would we accept it. But I'm going to go you one better. We don't get foundation money either. We are the only group that's working in this area that has 100% of our funding coming from folks. 90% of our money comes at $35 to $50 a piece. Think about that for a minute. Almost all of our funding comes from ordinary people throwing down $35, $50, maybe $100, right? And at the end of the day, what that allows us to do is to exercise independence, because we're not just politically independent, we're financially independent.
Now, do you allow yourself to think in terms of a schedule or deadlines, like, you know, we want to have this mm-hmm. amendment in place by,
yes.
You know, what is that deadline?
Yeah, we would be clear. We have short, mid, and long-term goals. And the way we see it is we will be celebrating the ratification of the 28th Amendment, the Move to Amend proposal, in 10 to 15 years. And so we move backwards from there. Our plan for 2015 at the national level, we're hosting two nationwide leadership summits where we're bringing together organizers for Move to Amend, one on the West Coast, one on the East Coast, going deep into the legal history of the corporation and what I'll be talking about tonight, helping people and doing skills training and role-playing efforts so that they can actually get as comfortable as I am talking about the history, the social political context of the rise of corporate constitutional rights and what the hell is a corporation and where did it come from under law and, you know, just helping people that way. We're also, though, in 2015 in Washington State going to be working very closely with the WAMEND group, working on the statewide initiative, which is probably the single most exciting thing happening at the state level in 2015. And I can tell you, the WAMEND group has the look and the feel and the air of inevitable success. This group is serious. They are credible. They are organized. They have a level of enthusiasm and esprit de corps that I've only seen a couple of times. And, you know, success breeds success, and you can feel it with the WAMEND group. So the short term for 2015 in WAMEND is a very exciting campaign.
Well, I see that we've run out of time and you're due up on stage, so thank you so much for taking the time today.
Thank you so much.
With Move to Amend National Spokesman David Cobb, this is Steve Evans reporting for KPTZ Compass.
This week's KPTC Compass was written and produced by Steve Evans. The Compass airs Mondays and Saturdays at noon, Tuesdays at 5 p.m., and Wednesdays at 10 a.m., exclusively here on KPTZ, the home of eclectic, authentic community radio. For the news team here at KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, I'm Steve Evans.